Dieter and Hutch here on Tuesday. What day is it? The 16th of September. I guess the thumbnail could have told you. And we're going through what we saw when we got to the tape. A couple of mea culpas. There's a couple of insights. Hopefully, we'll find out.
Ideally.
Not as entertaining on the... I was right about this, Jake. Not as entertaining on the All-22 as it was on the broadcast feed, my friend.
Yeah, it was... You know, it's funny. I was expecting, like, truly an absolute slop fest, terrible, terrible game where neither team could move the ball offensively. And I'm glad that wasn't the case. I had a great time grading out the defensive line. The offensive line was a little bit more interesting, but, like, still a pretty good game. I think we underestimated the... We overestimated the Saints' defensive front.
I think that's right.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Not great. Not great. I think the scheme is sound, but I don't think they have the dudes. I just don't think they have
And not to get too deep on the Saints, they're old business, but like I thought Breesy was really good, or Breese, whatever you want to say. Breese is probably the better way to go. Mm-hmm. It sounds like an Italian sea town, Breese. Mm-hmm. But they had Justin Reed's unbelievable. But when you're out there with a rookie safety who is not Marquise Siegel or Malik Mustafa, who's the god awful corner?
Jonas Sanker.
Who's fine.
He had some good moments for being a rookie safety.
Unquestioned, but like thrown into the fire. And then we talk about the corner. He was on the Niners last year. I'm sorry. I've barely been sleeping. Who's their absolute? Ike Yadam. Absolute
Ike
garbage.
Yadam, yes.
Like, you
Ike
can't
Yadam,
live like
Kool-Aid
this.
McKinstry.
McKinstry's fine, you know, but like Yadam is an absolute disaster class. And Kyle took full advantage and really brought it in the second part of that game. Put Werner and DeMario Davis got put in the blender, actually pretty significantly. But let's go into the lines.
Werner got worked.
Werner got worked in the second half.
I was kind of surprised by that.
I think Kyle just did good adjustments. And I think that Mac Jones in that system allows Kyle to do that, whereas other backup quarterbacks just frankly haven't, either because they're too different from the system that they wanted to run or they're not good enough. So
that
is what it is. We'll get into Mac a little bit later. Let's talk about the lines. I think that's where we're going to make our bread and butter this year. You graded out the defensive line. You do this for every game on the Hutch Report, hutchreport.substack.com.
Yep.
What stood out to you with the defensive line?
Defensive line, I'll go worst to first. Sam O had a pretty bad game.
He did not take advantage of that. Like, he looked good in Seattle, and you knew he was going to get more snaps, and he was on the field on that last snap. But
he's trying, right? He's a very high motor guy. I think he shows up. He feels smaller than I remembered him being. Not that he's actually that small, but like it feels like he gets moved around, and his technique's a little sloppy, and he's just eager, a little bit like stout to get upfield and make something happen, and it doesn't go all that well. At least it didn't this last week. Outside of him, though, like Bosa was unbelievable. Like, I don't know how Bosa didn't get like a perfect grade. He was phenomenal.
Well, Jake, let's be very clear about something here. What did you give him as a grade? Because I'm not dealing with this big overlord grading system anymore, because I looked at it. I made the mistake and I looked at it. They're not watching the sport that we're watching.
I don't understand what's happening over there. I don't understand what's happening.
So what Bosa did you get, Bosa?
Bosa got the highest grade on the team. There's not a good way to like convert my grade, but like basically zero is neutral and anything above that is better. He got 51 out of 59. So basically he's getting a plus on almost every snap.
Yeah.
And then if you break it down in like per snap count, the highest grade went to Bryce Huff, then Bosa.
Yeah.
And then Gytor Gross-Matos was behind him because he had some good pass game snaps.
He did.
We had one run game snap. I think literally one, which is good because he's been unreliable on the interior. And then it was Mykel and then Alfred Collins and Jordan Elliott.
Let's talk Alfred Collins. I just listened back to the Sunday post game. I had Collins as a dud. This is a mea culpa
right here. We were way off.
In my defense, you were just agreeing because you're a nice guy. You didn't go. I was going in hard because that first game against Seattle was a tough watch, and there were some really negative plays against the Saints, and those really were obvious in watching the game broadcast. A lot of the good stuff that he did, and like we all saw when he almost got Rattler.
Yeah.
But like a lot of the game broadcast is, you know, just for that angle, he's a big man in a crowded space, and a lot of the stuff that we saw in All-22 was him making really nice plays amid a mass of humanity, of which he's a large right. part of, that just it just didn't resonate at all when you're watching it from a sideline angle. And so, yeah, total mea culpa. It's not to say that the bad wasn't there. It showed up on both of the films, broadcast and All-22. But I did not see all the really good stuff that he did as well. We talk about him as a boom or yeah. bust player. This was a boom or bust game for Alfred Collins.
Yeah, I'm with you. He again, there's still some bad. And the bad, I think, part of it, and part of, I think, why we didn't expect it was...
Oh, I'm sorry, Jake. I'm totally screwing this up here.
It's okay. It's
back
okay.
on good. Alfred Collins. Sorry.
Yeah, part of it was is that he's so chaotic, right? He's so large. He's so long-levered that, like, when it doesn't look good, it looks really bad. It's a little bit like Mike McGlinchey, how, like, Mike McGlinchey was actually, like, overall good, but when he went down, it was like timber. Like, you yes. would literally watch him fall in slow motion. And it
was catastrophic
horrible.
When he would lose.
Yeah. Collins, though, there were some extremely, like, violent reps where he was discarding people.
Yes. Which isn't that yeah. crazy? I mean, I had never seen him disengage from a block until he played the Saints. So, yep. I mean, I'm not even half kidding. We didn't see it at Texas. We didn't see it at all in training camp. We didn't see it in the preseason. I thought that he couldn't do it. And it's a good reminder that just because someone hasn't done something doesn't mean that they can't do it. Though, you know, the evidence was pretty strong in the negative direction.
Right.
He was he was throwing dudes around. It was impressive.
Yeah, and it's by the way, these are the only grades I'm showing. The rest you gotta subscribe.
That's right. I'm a little surprised you're giving.
But I want to show people what they're getting. You know, okay. Like this is what it looks like. We got some good charts. I spent hours making charts, and grinding tape. And it was honestly doing the D line was fun because you started to see it with Collins. Mikel was just good. He was just really fucking good.
That's
all
a good
the
way
around.
To describe it. Yeah.
Again, in the pass game, is he lacking polish? Yeah, no shit.
He has
obviously.
No back. That's but fine. If you take still, the offensive lineman right. with you.
He's still collapsing the pocket. He doesn't have like elite bend, but like there's a little bit of bend that he has with the length that he's going to develop.
Yeah.
Kelvin Banks got demolished.
Neither of
game.
Us were high on Kelvin Banks coming in. There's
and that was
obviously
the other
enough.
Guy.
There's enough to think that Kelvin Banks has the physical skill sets to be
right.
a good player. It's his second game in the NFL. Like, it's a hard league. But when you're going up against a guy who was drafted effectively in the same spot as you and you're getting worked repeatedly, that's not ideal for your stock. But that's our problem.
And I think one of the craziest takeaways I had is the first half, he just left Kelvin Banks on an island against Nick Bosa. There was one snap where they went full max protect, double-teamed everybody on the defensive line except for Nick Bosa.
Yeah.
And guess what happened? Bosa bowled him into the pocket and Rattler like did a good job getting rid of the ball quick. Again, mea culpa there. Like
Rattler was good.
He's not bad.
Yeah.
I think I just can't stand him from his like college days and his whole vibe. And that like high school show he was on where he was just kind of like the most annoying kid of all time. But
he can sling it though.
He can sling it. He was pretty good, and Banks just got rocked. I don't know why they did that. In the second half, they sort of helped out a lot more, on Bosa. So
I'll say this about the one-on-one with Banks. He's clearly their better tackle, and 75 is a tough watch. But that's a lot of what the Niners do, right? Like that, they put Trent one-on-one, and they slide everybody else. And if Trent wins one-on-one, the play works flawlessly. And if not, so like they're stealing from the outside zone system, but the kid's probably not ready for it just yet.
So,
they're also a read option team. They did a lot of read option with Rattler and Kamara or even Miller. And in that, you're typically leaving someone unblocked and you're reading them, which they did with Mikel at one point, and that didn't go great for them.
Yeah.
But a quirky offense, 11 personnel, an offensive line that's good on the interior but questionable on the outside, which isn't great for wide
except
zone.
Except for Cesar Ruiz, who's pretty bad. But like McCoy's holding that line together barely. One thing you mentioned is like the Niners just like let Trent do his thing. Week one, they did. Right.
Yeah.
Week one, they fully left Trent on an island. This week, they totally changed that. Yeah. He was still on an island a decent amount, but him and McKivitz had the same amount of one-on-one reps.
How much do you think that is the defensive scheme that the Saints are throwing their way?
I honestly think it was Trent's knee and his health and wanting to give him help. Okay. Because he got, like, truly, I didn't count the same way I did in week one as I did week two.
Yeah.
But Trent had, like, 19 reps with help. McKivitz had 16. Both were, like, the lowest on the line. But, like, McKivitz and Trent were sort of handled evenly, where they both got a little bit of help, and they both were on islands a few times. Brendel, by the way, as center. I think he had only three one-on-one reps the whole game, but he was pretty good. But like they treated Trent differently than they usually do, and I think it's knowing his health and how week one looked.
And they had to win up front. Like there's no world in which the 49ers win with Mac Jones as their quarterback unless they're getting outstanding and like legitimately outstanding offensive play. Now I see what the problem was with our little ball game. We're doing great.
We're doing great over here.
Maybe BlackRazor59 was right in the comments section. Bring on Larry. You can show us how the pros do it. I banned him. I'm not in a good mood today. So I feel like a dick now, but okay. Let's stick with the offense. Let's talk about Connor Colby. Jumps in after Ben Bartsch goes out for what is yet another Ben Bartsch injury. Starting to wonder if this guy can ever play football. Colby, did you see anything bad from him in this game?
Yeah, there were a couple bad snaps. The article I just posted, I showed one where there was basically, I don't know how to describe it, but there's a guy coming at him. He goes left. He's supposed to hand him off to Trent, and then there's a looper coming around. Instead of resetting and preparing for the looper, he doesn't get his eyes up and gets beat and allows like a free rusher to Mac. So he did that, and then the very next play was like an outstanding run rep where he climbed second level, created a massive hole for Brian Robinson Jr., who, you know, could have made a 20-yard gain. It was nine. It was a good gain, but we'll talk about him in a sec. But
okay, who else do you want to hit on?
I would like to talk about Robinson Jr. real quick. Okay. I know we mentioned it before, but like, I think he's going to lose that number two job at some point this season. If he keeps playing like this, like he's reliable. I mean, and maybe they don't just because he can handle the ball and he's not fumbling, right? But if there are any ball security issues at any point, I think that's going to change because he's not doing anything extra. And again, the thing I just posted to the Hutch Report, I showed a clip where like, is it hard? Did Luke Farrell sort of miss a block, but was he late on his assignment? Allowed a little bit of pressure? Yeah, but like any running back who's sort of worth their salt is going to make a cut and get 4 or 5 yards at least, and he got two. He just ran right into it. He doesn't have the shifty ability.
That's it. And I don't think he sees it all that great either. Or at least he doesn't see anything. He has narrow vision. Maybe that's the better way to put it. Remember the cones of vision in Madden back in the day? Very narrow. Christian McCaffrey sees the whole field, baby. I mean, Isaac Arendo doesn't see anything. He's got horse blinders on. But, like, this is exactly what I saw on the Washington tape, not just last year, but the last 2 years. And if you're not able to take advantage of a wider field when you have Jaden Daniels in the backfield, because defenses have to spread out to protect themselves against this and play a lot of zone to keep the eyes in the backfield. If you can't take advantage of these wider windows that he creates by just his mere threat to pull and run the ball, you can't see. Like, you're not doing that with Mac Jones. You're definitely not doing that with this. And he's not a guy who has the ability to squeeze through tight windows. And that's the thing that they said they liked about Jordan James. And it does show up on his Oregon tape. He doesn't mind going into tight spaces and trying to squeeze out the other side. I'm not sure if I'm sold on his pass catching ability, but they at least tried that at Oregon. Like, he can run a swing pass. And
listen,
something.
I wasn't that high on him coming out of the draft, but like he grew on me. Like he's sharp, he's shifty, and he's got a patience to his game that I think allows him to read. And again, because he's smaller, like he's kind of hard to get eyes on and get hands on, and he just sort of follows blockers really well. I just think like eventually he's going to be the number two at some point this season because Robinson is just, there's too many like 2-yard carries that should at least be five.
But as I said after the game, I mean, he's a perfect control for the running back situation. He's getting the same blocking Christian McCaffrey's getting. The same blocking. They're running the same plays in terms of inside zone and outside zone that Christian McCaffrey's running. Like, they're not doing anything different for either of them as running backs. And Christian McCaffrey is finding ways to hurdle over two dudes laying on the ground and, you know, squeeze through four tight windows and counter when, you know, everybody's sliding one way. And he's getting 9 yards, 14 yards, 7 yards. I mean, he had a couple 7 yard runs that were as good as it gets, but it was 7 yards. So it doesn't show up on a highlight reel. Meanwhile, Robinson, like, he'll break a tackle every now and again, but it almost feels accidental with him. It's just what you saw in Washington. In Washington, I know that the story that people have thrown out there is, oh, they were trying to get ahead of it. Like, he was going to get a good contract, so they were trying to get ahead of it. No, they saw that they had a seventh-round pick in Bill Crosby Merritt, and, like, Eckler, who looked spry before the Achilles went, and I feel bad for Eckler because by all accounts he's a really good guy and has had a really good NFL career, and I'll use it in the past tense. They had Rodriguez back there. Like, why are we going through these motions pretending that Brian Robinson Jr. is still the same guy he was his rookie year when he's not? He hasn't gotten any better. In fact, he's inarguably gotten worse. He doesn't fit our scheme. Like, we're going to have to take touches from him. He's clearly a guy who thinks himself to be pretty damn good. He went to Alabama. He's probably then the best player on his football team his entire life. Like, let's not deal with that problem. And if it costs us $1.5 million or whatever, like, we're willing to eat it for a draft pick. And now the Niners get to worry about that.
Yeah, Benally asked a good question. Would Jordan Mason be doing better? I do think so, because Mason, although sometimes misses a read completely, he will, like, break off a run for like 25 yards that he has no business breaking off. Like, his ability to gain yards that weren't there was really impressive, and maybe that's because he wasn't reading it right, and so he's putting himself in tougher situations. But there was, like, a level of physicality and just, I can get you some extra yards that I don't know that he's the burstiest runner, but Robinson is no burst.
Robinson has, there's no second gear for Robinson. And it's funny because they're both guys who kind of have a similar play style. I don't think it's a one for one or anything, but in theory, they're supposed to be the thunder to the lightning, right? The white lightning, as it were. But Mason got 3 yards beyond expected last year. Like, so not only is he running into a dude, but he's taking that dude down and then going. And I think that the expectation was that Robinson was going to be the same kind of guy and bring him into the 49ers system. And, oh, well, now he'll be breaking a tackle and getting another 3 yards. And he's done that once or twice a game, but that has to be his entire game, as it was for Mason. And it's just not there. I mean, I haven't looked at his next gen stats yet, but I would imagine that, much like every other year in his NFL career, he has like plus 0.1 yards above expectation.
Right. I think it's negative. I can honestly look it up, but it's not going to ruin this offense. But if McCaffrey goes out, this thing could come to a stand. I mean, obviously,
I'll say this: if McCaffrey goes out, I don't think we see Brian Robinson's role change at all. At all. I think he still gets the same amount of carries in the same circumstance, and I think they elevate James to one because he can at least run a passable facsimile of Christian McCaffrey, in that you can still run some of the pass game.
I was waiting for you to say passable facsimile.
Yes. Am I getting is that becoming a bit now where I'm saying facsimile? Is it turning into my revelation line?
It's a good word. Yeah, we got to stop calling everybody a revelation.
Well, at this point now, it's everyone's calling everyone a revelation. The Niners are 2-0 with low expectations, or I guess not high expectations coming into this game. I don't know. It seemed like expectations were off the charts going into the season, and I couldn't understand why. 2-0 is 2-0, and it should be noted, like, they have a chance to go 3-0. They're favored at home against a Cardinals team. That would be 2-0 in the division, and for all the shit that has gone wrong with this team for the last month, maybe even more, like, that's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, unbelievable if they can do it, but they got a grit to them. And I know that that's kind of how I described the San Francisco Giants at the beginning of the year and how's that all working out, but it's a much smaller sample size than 162. You get 17 games and two division wins to start it off really puts you in in a driver's seat for a playoff spot and brings the division into play in what might be the best division in football.
Yeah. I mean, I will say with the rushing yards over expected thing, McCaffrey currently has negative 28 rushing yards over
above
expected.
It, under, yeah, under expectation. That kind of makes sense. He does not have the same burst. I haven't looked at his
but
miles per hour data.
That's the fourth, fifth worst in the league, and then Robinson's at 11th worst in the league at negative 18.
But I want to be clear about this. I don't think that holds for McCaffrey on the basis right. of they've played two defenses, and I suppose I can argue now a third coming up, though I haven't gotten into the Cardinals tape yet and what they're doing this year, but just going off of what they did last year and what it is you could see they wanted to do. Like Seattle's defense, the Niners' defense, we're going to have to talk about them as a possible top 10, maybe top 5 unit if they continue on this trajectory, which is not guaranteed. Seattle's defense has a chance to be the best in the NFL when it's all said and done. I really believe that with the way that they play, with that beef up front, with their versatility on the back end. Like, yeah, I'm very bullish.
If Byron Murphy comes good, too, that's going to be a real problem. I mean, Leonard Williams is, like, playing, like, the best, one of the best defensive.
It's what he did in the second half of last year. Yeah.
He's been crazy good.
He's awesome. So, it's the fact that the Niners are in that conversation, deservedly so, with the way that Bob Saleh is coaching it up, is lofty. They went up against Brandon Staley, who is a very good defensive coordinator who doesn't have the dudes on that side yet. They're closer than I think to
Vernon Broughton did have some good reps, my guy.
Yeah.
He did have a few.
I liked
him. He gave Pooney some trouble. And they started injecting him in the second half and started playing him a bit more.
So I think that if we're talking about, you know, kind of the defenses that they've gone up against, they've had two pretty tough tests here. I mean, a really tough test in Seattle in week one where, you know, McCaffrey's coming in. You didn't know if he was going to play or not, but was the game. And then the Saints, which, you know, their entire defense is predicated off of stopping exactly what the Niners want to do in the run game. And they did a good job of that, even though I thought McCaffrey was really good without the statistical backing of that in the run game. Okay, who else do we want to talk about? Do we want to talk about Upton Stout? The people are clamoring.
Yeah, we should go to defense. We're getting asked about Stout a lot. We can move to the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. Again, I was locking in on D-line and O-line, but I watched Stout, and it felt similar to me to the first game, which is he's actually staying in phase pretty well in pass coverage, but he's getting so damn handsy that he's going to get flagged until he figures that out. And he's just tugging. He's tugging at jerseys constantly. And because of his size, any like contested catch, he's going to lose a lot of the time. And that's going to be trouble against tight ends, especially bigger tight ends, which is why you have Warner covering Juwan Johnson on that second down, I think, with like a minute left to go where he had the breakup.
When he was in the A gap and jetted out to the flat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an unbelievable play by an unbelievable football player in Fred Warner.
Again, like a perfect football game from Fred Warner. And I can't stop watching it. I couldn't stop watching that play.
I would like to remind everybody, like, Fred looked this good at the beginning of last year, even
correct.
With worse personnel around him. Then he got injured and gutted through an entire season with a broken foot.
Right. And he's healthy. Getting attacked. While getting actually attacked.
Yeah, defensive coordinators realize these other guys can't make plays, so if we just take Fred out, there's no chance anyone's doing anything. And they were right, and Fred looked mortal. Again, he was playing injured on a broken foot the entire year, and he still had flash plays. He's healthy. He's getting the kind of defensive line play up front that gives him the ability to be freer. I'm not saying totally free, but freer than he's been in a really long time. He has D. Winters, who he doesn't have to cover for, as opposed to every linebacker they played there, including D. Winters last year.
Right.
except for like three quarters of Dre Greenlaw. And when you saw it, you're like, wow, this defense feels really different. What's up with that?
And the Broncos saw that and they're like, all right, we'll give him whatever it was, $60 million.
That's right.
$50 million, whatever. And has he played a snap yet?
Well, let's not pat the Niners on the back for that one. They were more than willing to do the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah. They were going to go for it.
And it's interesting. We talked about this on Sunday. I don't think we maybe expounded on it enough. The Nick Martin thing, we're not going to relitigate the whole Nick Martin thing. Nick Martin, what we've said about Nick Martin is what we'll say about Nick Martin until new evidence emerges about Nick Martin. But There was sort of a galaxy brain take, and forgive me, I don't remember who asked the question in the comments, but it was like, is Nick Martin just the... And I think this was a bit tongue-in-cheek. Is he just the D. Winters replacement down the line when D. Winters gets his big contract? No, he was supposed to be the D. Winters alternative this year if D. Winters wasn't, in fact, good. The Niners, I know, talked him up. I think that had more to do with Martin than it did with Winters in the preseason, where they're like, we better be talking up D. Winters, because if it ain't D. Winters, we are fucked. And it is D. Winters. So they're in really, really good shape there. Winters has been magnificent as well.
And their third linebacker, Jair Brown.
I liked it. I thought it was really good.
It was only six snaps.
Yeah.
Right? Only six snaps, but my God.
It makes a whole lot of sense. It was a really smart move by Saleh on two fronts. One, it's just one. The Saints are a tempo team, and they wanted to go and, I mean, they were watching Indiana Pacers film in the offseason trying to set a tone for the season, and they did hurry it up, and frankly, they looked better when they hurried it up.
Agreed.
But we saw in the first game of the year against Seattle when Mikel and Yetur Gross-Matos were at defensive tackle, the Seahawks went hurry up because they go, we can run against that, which they kind of could and they kind of couldn't. But that was, you know, a key for them to say, okay, let's keep personnel on the field. You like what you got? We're going to go with what we got, and we like our advantages here. There was no question against an 11-personnel team in the Saints that has at least one good pass-catching back in Kamara, one of the greatest of all time, or at least in recent NFL history, and a tempo temperament that if you put Luke Gifford on the field, Luke Gifford wasn't getting off the field unless you called timeout or someone faked an injury. So just not doing that was, I think it really put the Saints off their game. They were not as tempo as I expected them to be because they thought that Gifford was going to be out there in base to stop the run, and he wasn't. And I know, yeah, you're right, it was six snaps. But just that change up of here's Jair Brown playing what they used to call the star position, and they've done it with Eric Reed.
Right.
They did it with Huff. They did it with Jimmy Ward. They did it with Tavarius Moore. Remember Big Nickel?
Very briefly.
They did it in the Super Bowl with Tavarius Moore. And I like Tavarius Moore. I wonder what happened to him. But
yeah, great athlete, just didn't really know how to play.
That's how it goes sometimes. The Emmanuel Mosley effect. But they have tried this sort of hybrid Sam star position, bandit. It's the position that Fred Warner played in college. It's very prevalent amongst 30 stack teams at the college level. They've tried it with different guys. This makes a lot of sense for Jair Brown.
It's great. It seemed like it kept it simple for him, right? Like, you're just in the box. You don't have to come from depth. And it felt like it's safety. Like, he's been overthinking things. Like, the timing, you can see him.
There's too much like, for him to sort process of slowly, back there.
Yeah. Right. He's like, what do I do? Is now? Do I go now? Do I go now? And then, like, sometimes triggering too early and not having a feel for it. Whereas at linebacker, it's all right there for you, right? Like, it's you're not having to wait. You're not having to come from depth. It's just read it. You have your assignment. And, like, the way he sunk on that play that he broke up, that was a key pass breakup. That was a really impressive play. And on the fumble that Warner had, he flew downhill to make that tackle. Like,
I just
looked comfortable.
And I don't think it's going to be an everyday thing, but he's where he's at on the depth chart, he's a special teams player and a gadget player. And that's a good gadget against 11 personnel. You can get away with, you can get away with it a little bit, being a little bit lighter, because they're not going to throw in a second tight end, or they're not going to have a fullback out there to really bring some heft. But you know, in games where you have an Utes at fullback, or games where like this one, where you're going to get three tight end sets from Arizona, like, I'm not bullish on Jair Brown in those situations. I think I'd rather have Gifford, and that's going to be an interesting problem for Saleh to have to figure out, because you are sort of dictating terms defensively by your personnel. That's not a new statement. That's football. Right. But I don't know if he can be an every down guy in that role, but he's closer to the line of scrimmage. There's less for him. I think he just has one key on every play, and that's the first time that's happened since he was a rookie, and they made it really, really simple for him.
Yeah. I mean, the level up in coaching. By the way, Saleh's just like, Whew. He's just in the kitchen just having fun. He's mixing shit together.
I love it. Like, he's got the dudes to do it, too. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're cooking, if you got shitty ingredients. I think he's got the dudes.
Nick Bosa rushing over a center, rushing over a guard. Like, very intriguing stuff. And also, some of it didn't work. Like, in the red zone, they got beat twice when they went cover zero, and they had six defensive linemen.
Yeah, here's Pinnick one-on-one with a good receiver. Yeah,
which, that's the problem. But, like, they played it tight, and Rattler also fit the ball in there. But, like,
good throw.
It was a guaranteed pressure in 2 seconds, and you're saying, all right, you're going to have to throw the ball immediately. And I like it. Like, it didn't work. But, man, no. It's fun seeing four defensive tackles out there. And then Mykal Williams and Nick Bosa, and you're just like, I don't know if this is going to work, but keep trying it. See what happens.
It's airs of commission, which is just not something that this team has had in their last two defensive coordinators. I mean, Steve Wilks was so stubborn and so angry at the world that he's like, I'm going to do it my way, and I'm going to prove that I'm smarter. And it's like, dude, like, you inherited an unbelievable situation. Fred was your defensive coordinator that entire year. The amount of stuff that Fred had to fix on the field that Steve Wilks just didn't really know about is a story for when Fred retires. I've been sitting on, like, I don't want to bury, Steve Wilks now, but like, do they play Steve Wilks at all this year? I don't even know what team he's with, but it was a bad situation to say the least. They moved on from that, and then they, had Staley and Sorensen.
He's the Jets defensive coordinator.
So can we do like a 1 minute aside here? And I promise to stay on time with this. What is Aaron Glenn doing with this media mentality of saying, I got to watch the tape. I got to watch the tape. I got to watch the tape. Like, stonewalling questions like he's Bill Belichick.
After the game, that's what he's doing?
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember.
So dumb. It's so dumb.
I remember he came in like aggressively and was like, we're going to set the tone, like all this stuff to try and like sort of big dick the media.
That's exactly what he's doing.
Because he saw what happened to Sal, and he's like, I'm going to get on top of it. I'm going to alpha them, which is like, not coaching the New York Jets. You're not.
Because you need to win to do
as
that.
As a New York Jets fan, theoretically.
Yeah.
You're they're terrible, motion. And I think they're always going to be terrible. Also, what do you do? Like, you think Justin Fields is your answer at quarterback? Like, that's like a real answer?
The $20 million
football
man.
Games?
What Justin are we doing? Fields is getting paid twice as much as Mac Jones. Regardless, it was
awesome.
It was. I find their whole situation hilarious, and like Wilkes just angry at the world, and I can't say nice things about Wilkes. I mean, I spent a good deal of time just hanging out with him at the Super Bowl, and it's like, wow. There's a lot going on here. You might want to think about the game, but that's neither here nor there. Last year with Sorensen, I think that the expectation was, I think externally for sure, that like Brandon Staley was shadow defensive coordinator. Pretty obvious he had no job. He was on the Anthony Lynn, former Chargers coach.
Right.
What do you do here plan?
I love that.
And you know what? I think we alluded to it on Sunday. Like, there is something about the Shanahan shine. Like, you come and you work for Kyle, and now you can kind of get your reputation whitewashed.
It's like, what did you do for Kyle? Don't worry about it.
No.
He hired me.
And so. Kyle will give a good recommendation. I'll say this about Kyle. He gives good recommendations from what I hear. Like, when you call him up to say, like, what does this guy do for you? Even the slapdickiest dudes that worked for him for 1 year that he fired, and that's not Wilkes. Wilkes is anything but a slapdick. But, like, even guys who he's like, oh, I don't like him, he'll, like, be like, oh, yeah, he's great. It's just like Kyle. It's probably because he doesn't have a good dossier on him, so he just defaults to, like, oh, yeah, what's the right thing to do, which speaks to his character, I suppose. But that's neither here nor there. Sorensen last year just didn't do anything. Right? No. Like, what? They didn't do anything.
Well, because it was like, we're going to get back to doing what we do, so be as milquetoast as possible. And then they let him experiment a little bit, and they went, no.
Please stop doing that.
And then Kyle's like, all right, I guess I got to coordinate the defense.
Ill OMG Will 67. I was pissed at Wilkes when he was at Mizzou. He made us terrible on D that year. You're telling me, buddy. M-I-Z. It was frankly unbelievable. So, this is a great line from David Castro. Being under Kyle is like filing for bankruptcy.
You just got to bounce back.
You got to go rebuild your credit, man. In the eyes of the marketplace, you got to rebuild your credit. Robert's trying stuff. I've likened this to this is like Evil Bob. And
yeah,
what's even more impressive was, yes, he tried a bunch of stuff against Seattle. He tried different stuff against the Saints. And he's going to, I think he's going to be trying different stuff every week. I think he's freed to do that now because they have a bunch of bodies on defensive line that they can rotate through. They don't have to worry so much about protecting those guys, and they can just play free. And it's not always going to look good. Like, there will be busts, probably a lot of them in some games. There will be disaster classes, but you're also going to get like really awesome games like we've seen in the first two.
And it's no longer as easy to say, all right, the 49ers are going to rush four all from the same spot, and they're going to be simple on the back end. Because defenses have evolved too quickly, and offenses got too good. And
can we dive in on that? I feel like defense has the upper hand.
Defense does have the upper hand. I think it was 2 years ago that that trend started with McDonald, Flores.
Yeah.
Different stuff, but like just throwing a lot at offenses where now it's like, what coverage are we playing? You don't know. You won't even know post snap sometimes. And like they had Brock's head spinning in a few games.
Yeah. It's, you think about the offense that everyone runs in the NFL. And I know that that's overly simplistic, but like kind of is. It's kind of the case. Everyone's running the Shanahan offense or the McVay offense. It's whatever your style is, but that's the same thing. And those offenses are predicated on a term that we use all the time. It sounds tropey, but it's true. Creating conflict for the defense. But and when I say conflict, that means breaking their rules. So they have certain things that they're supposed to do in certain times in certain places. They have rules. They have keys. They have things that they're honing in on. Do this or that, depending on this or that. Kyle goes out there and is like, what if I made you think about a third thing and you had to decide between all of these in the moment? Hope you picked right. And that's what we saw in the second half of this game with linebackers and DeMario Davis and Pete Warner, who are good linebackers. I mean, you could just see their heads spinning. They're like, I got too much to do.
Yeah,
I don't
Warner
know which
got
one to
tossed
take.
Around.
There was a couple of plays with Davis where he's just standing there. It's like he's a
and
great
he's a,
linebacker.
He's a great player. He had some really good reps too. He defeated Spoonie a couple times,
but unquestionably. But when they put when he was in space in zone defense, he was like, "I'm supposed to be covering three guys at one time. What if I just stand here?" And and he was breaking late. It was like it was kind of incredible to watch. It was very reminiscent of the best game I've ever seen Kyle do. It was back in 2019 when they played the Giants and. I cannot remember the linebacker's name. He played for the Packers and then the Giants. And he was kind of just an A-gap blitzer and could do nothing else. And Kyle ended his career in one game. I think it was Rodriguez. Forgive me if I got that wrong. But number 40 just ended his career. And that was the Kyle thing. But defenses, as you were saying, Hutch, like they have the upper hand with those amoeba, the dynamic things, because it's positionless football, the same way that a Kyle offense is positionless offense. And they are saying, we're going to put you in conflict because you have keys too. You have certain blocking keys, and you're not going to know who's coming and who's going. So good luck reading that on the time. You have certain progressions that you're looking to do. Good luck trying to figure that one out as everybody's flying around. We're going to give up a lot. Like, there will be plays that are totally busted. And the Saints are a good example of this. They're a very dynamic defense. And against the Cardinals, they gave up a 52-yard rush. It's because their guys kept running into each other. But they gave up a 52-yard rush. And it is strictly the defense doing airs of commission in this day and age. So I'm very excited about that on a league-wide level. And it's cool that Robert Saleh is part of that because he was rush four, drop seven his entire career. It was just a question of how many safeties there were.
Yeah, and now he's mixing it up. I think the coverage was a little bit more direct in this game than it was in the first game, but the defensive line was a lot trickier. And I just think there's a lot of pieces to work with now. Like, there's a lot of rookies. There's a lot of new stuff. And I think he's, like, genuinely just enjoying fucking around with it and just seeing what happens.
When you have Nick Bosa and Fred Warner, you get a lot of opportunities to fuck around with it. Let's talk about Connor Colby. We're totally remiss in waiting until minute 40 to talk about Connor Colby. Dare we say a revelation, Jake?
A revelation.
He was awesome. He had really good reps the entire game. And Ben Bartsch is dead now.
He was actually better in the run game than the pass game, which is sort of what we thought coming out of college. But then, like, the preseason was like he's better at pass protection than the run game. But, like, and maybe it's because he's the only healthy guy on the field, and he's young, and he's athletic.
Yeah, maybe.
but he was moving and he yes. was putting some guys in the dirt, and there was a level of, it's funny, I actually thought he was like pretty soft in college, and in this he was like finishing dudes, and he was going yeah. for the finish kind of in a dickish way, which is what you want from a lineman.
Love it.
And again, like, maybe it was just Iowa having a terrible scheme and it didn't work. I don't know. But like, I was dead wrong on what I thought. And again, early in his career, but way, way, way better than I expected.
It wasn't the thing that stood out to me with him wasn't that he was just getting to the second level blocks, which he did consistently, if not
right.
universally. I think there was one or two that he might have missed a little bit when we're talking pin pull. But it's not just that he got to the second level, it's that he delivered force at the second level. So he's getting to the second level and is in position enough to where he can deliver yeah. some shots at the second level while delivering a good block to start. Like, that's really hard to do. And it's one game against the Saints, for whatever that's worth, like one scheme, one kind of defense, all this. If that is a standard trend, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here. I'm not trying to, you know, move the over to, I'm not, that is what all pros do. Like, the difference between a good guard and an all-pro guard is that, well, and the difference between a good guard and a bad guard in an outside zone scheme is the good guards can get to the second level.
Yep.
The good guards and the great guards difference is that the great guards are absolutely fucking destroying dudes at the second level because they are bigger and they're stronger, and they're so good feet-wise that they got themselves in a position to be bigger and stronger. And this is what we're seeing from Gray Zabel with the Seahawks, who looks awesome, just totally awesome. I saw a lot of that stuff with Connor Colby. They didn't throw as yeah. much on him, and there were a couple of pull blocks that where he's coming across the line, which they clearly wanted for Barch, that they just didn't change for Colby, that he was a little slow on.
He was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm just...
Fair. yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But the ability to deliver force at the second level, that is not just him being strong. That's him having really good footwork as well. And yeah. I'm not going to pin it on the Saints defensive line. I like the Saints defensive line. I like their scheme. I like yeah. their linebackers.
No, I mean, Barch was a real mess in week one. Graded out by PFF as the 49ers' best offensive lineman in week one. Subscribe to the Hutch Report where you get actual grades.
It's unbelievable. Sense. They're not an AI like, bot.
And he seemed like he was going to get injured on every single play. And he just, I don't know. He was out of sorts. There was some good, there was some bad. But like there was a level of confidence that Colby played with, and a level of physicality where he's like not, and there were some times where passing stuff off, Barch was really bad at passing stuff off.
Yeah.
There's just like a level of competency that I was shocked that Colby had. And yes, the Saints D line was iffy, but like getting to the second level, he was just clearing people out, and that stands alone against any team.
That's a timing thing. That's a yep. feel thing too, which is not terribly surprising. I kind of went in on people during the off season about like, oh, they ran the same system at Iowa. It's like, no, they ran inside zone. Like, they ran just inside zone, and the 49ers like to run wide zone. But in this game, they ran a lot of inside zone because that's kind of, if you had the fullback in there, there were spots that you could have it. If you know, took the linebackers out of the play a little bit, and yeah, he had a real feel for it from the jump. Going to be interesting if they do more outside zone moving forward. Maybe they won't because of all these 5 and 6 man fronts that they're going to face, because that's the new wave of defense in the NFL this season. Maybe it's a lot more inside zone for the Niners this year. If that is the case, I mean, he clearly has a knack for that. That is in fact the system that he ran. And yeah, I don't see how Ben Barch ever starts for this team again unless Connor Colby gets injured.
No, I don't think so. And that's the thing. He's been hurt like his whole career, and regardless of the physical upside, he wasn't really marrying that even in week one.
Yeah, he had the elbow brace thing on. Like, doesn't surprise me that he had a hard time passing dudes off. Like, couldn't really get his strength and stuff. There were moments for Ben Barch, but they were mere fleeting moments.
Also, Pooney doesn't look right still. Still does not look right.
Can't blame him.
Neither does Trent, but Trent was really good anyway. Brendel, really, really solid, and so is McKivitz. McKivitz has just been really good.
Yeah. The big you know, kind of the big thing that we've heard time and time again from fans is like, why don't the Niners invest in the offensive line? That's the game why. Connor Colby, McKivitz, that's why. Because you have a system where you can find these guys late and they're serviceable, and then you can spend your money, big money at least, on other positions. What else do we need to cover in this Saints game before we move forward to the Cardinals, Jake?
What else do we need to cover?
Mac Jones? Do we need to talk about Mac and
Getting
away with a few?
Yeah, Mac missed some reads early, and he just like honed it. Like that one where he funneled it to Juwan Jennings.
Yeah.
Even the play before that where like Pearsall was like open on a sit route and he threw it to like Jake Tondras in the flat and missed him. And you're like, all right. I mean, I know you like the middle of the field and tight ends.
But Sean Z, sorry, with a great take. It's accurate.
I think Banks probably over Barch at this point. But for the price tag, for the value, I think that's an accurate order.
Barch was a better guard than Banks last year for this team.
He was. No, he absolutely
so,
was.
So the transitive property does, in fact, lead us to Connor Colby somehow. The Mac throws that he got away with might be a one-time thing. Now, maybe Mac feels a little bit more comfortable moving forward, and he's not spraying it as much. He had a lot of time to throw. I'd imagine that teams are going to try to not have that happen anymore. We'll see if they're able to. But he was still spraying it a little bit. I do think the All-22 bears out. Like, I wouldn't exactly trust the rest of the season to Mac Jones. Good in short-term situations, but if Mac Jones is your dude, he doesn't have the dudes around him to insulate some of the problems that he shows on tape.
Yeah, I'm still not optimistic about this upcoming week. But again, like he delivered the ball to where it had to go most of the time. Mm-hmm. He was good enough, right? That was sort of the prophecy foretold of Mac Jones with Kyle Shanahan. Like, yeah, it's probably going to be good enough, but, right? Like,
I mean, he did look stiff. I mean, I don't think he doesn't have a different mode. Chris, Mr. 49er, he's Mr. 49er, ladies and gentlemen. Purdy gets away with throws all the time. I presume he means bad throws all the time. Yes, but here's the difference. He can make things happen.
He's also fighting for his life a lot more, and Mac, they
gave... A lot of Max protect, yeah.
That was a lot of Max protect, and also the Saints just had no pressure. I mean, not no pressure. They got some home, but like he was standing in the pocket longer than you ever see Purdy get the chance to a lot of that game.
Listen, we're not going to have to litigate if Brock Purdy is good or not. If you don't see it by now, you're not going to see it. That's fine. That's your prerogative. Hopefully we can convert you slowly but surely, or we've already gotten you to a certain point. We're not saying that he's the greatest quarterback of all time or anything, but he is someone who can help you win, whereas Mac Jones is a quarterback who can prevent you from losing. But I'm not sure
if you're lucky.
If he has a good day, he can stop it from you losing, but I'm not sure he can carry you to a win. This isn't to take away anything from what Mac put on Sunday. He was really good. He was really good. He wasn't great. There's a lot there. Didn't make anything, but he worked the system, and the system worked for him in a big way. But again, one team, one scheme, one set of personnel. The question is, can you consistently do it week after week? And Kyle's got a hell of a game plan that he's got to come up with here against the Cardinals. And there are three safeties and five linemen. And you want to talk about chaos. They're sound and chaotic at the same time. It's a dangerous combination for a defense. And so much of that would then lend yourself to thinking, okay, well, this has to be a big Christian McCaffrey game. This has to be a big George Kittle game, because those are the kind of two-way players that can put a chaotic, conflict-inducing defense into conflict themselves, and yet you don't have those guys. So how can you find it in the scheme to create small windows that you can consistently take advantage of? He did it against the Saints. He did an awesome job against the Saints. It's a different kettle of fish with the Cardinals with and those three safeties.
I'm going to rip through three comments before we get out of here.
Love it.
Can Fred cover McBride?
Yes.
Yes, but it's a really tall task.
It's also a totally different way. McBride is flexed out as a receiver. He's a big slot receiver. So the better question is, can Marquise Siegel guard him? Maybe this is where Jair Brown comes into play.
Who knows? We'll see. How many weeks until Mike McDaniel comes back? Great question. I miss him.
We love Mike McDaniel. But Mike is not long for his job.
For being blunt. It's a tough situation. And
At least no asshole came on these airwaves and said that the Dolphins were going to win their division. Meanwhile, that Colts pick that Jake threw out there looking sharper by the day.
How about Danny Dimes, folks, and Jonathan Taylor back like he was, what was it, 2021? Anyway.
He's so fast.
Lastly, what was that weird play where we tried to give Ricky a handoff?
Great question.
Great question, because that's literally the one snap I've left ungraded, because basically it's a house call if they get it right. Yes. No, it is.
Okay.
It's a house call if the timing's right. What happens is, I think it's Farrell who fucks up first. He's been not great. He's
not that good at blocking. It's we're
for
back,
being a blocking
we're,
tight end.
We're kind of in a Saubert scenario here.
He's late. Yeah, but I do think he'll improve, but it feels like he's not up to par with the system. He's like late, and it's like he doesn't know what his assignment is or something, yeah, or a step late.
Yeah.
So he misses his, and then what happens is Trent Williams and Kyle Juszczyk go for the same guy. Mm-hmm. Trent has a guy that he probably should block right in front of him, but he doesn't know Juice is behind him.
Because Juice did a little counter. Yeah.
Picks up the wrong guy. If they take the right guy and they both block him well,
Trent stays on his guy. Juice comes around and gets the guy that Trent's going for. He had to turn around and go backwards to try to get him, which it's like, how's that going to work?
If they get their guy, then it's a 3-on-2 at the next level between, it's, I think, Pooney, Brendel, and like McKivitz against two defenders. They ended up screwing up, but I think that's because the play was all screwed up and the angles changed.
Yeah.
But if Pearsall gets to that level, it's a touchdown. I know those plays look like absolute dog shit when they go wrong. Yeah.
If not for Justin Reed being on the field, I'd 100% agree with you there. But Justin Reed is so goddamn good.
Yeah, but like it would, if it's not a house call, it's a 25-yard gain. Like he's getting very
it's
close
a big play
to that pylon.
For sure. And we've seen that play run, not that specific one actually, but we've seen those kind of jailbreaks work for huge gains all the time. That's a staple of the Shanahan offense.
And last one. What are you talking about?
No. Yeah. Sorry. I wanted to get into this. Mike McDaniels and Kyle Shanahan are brothers. I mean,
legitimately.
We don't need to get into the whole story.
We don't need to get into it, but they're very as tight as two guys can be.
I'm gonna have a hot take here. I'm pretty sure that Mike McDaniel was pissed off that he had just lost to a third string quarterback and didn't want to have a big old bro hug session after losing a game that they had every right to win, and they should have won, and they played to win, and Brock Purdy carved him up. And it's like, you can still be angry at your brother, but those two.
That checks out.
Nothing but love.
Two things before we get out of here.
Yes, sir.
One, my tape takeaways with the clips are on the Hutch Report. That's paid. Again, that's going to be a paid thing. And then grades, offensive line, defensive line, and I'll have Jair Brown. Again, only 6 snaps. Still going to grade it out anyway.
Awesome.
That will be up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Lastly, if you check the description, I just updated it. Mm. Dieter and I have our own tape watching music playlist. Sicko's Mix. We're gonna try and put them out each week. Dieter's is weird.
It's so weird. This
Dieter's
week.
Is really weird. Go listen to it. If you want to watch tape for yourself, or you're just doing something, it's a Spotify link converted to something else. If you want, we're gonna try and do that every week. It's like what we actually listen to while we're watching tape. So
right.
Go enjoy that if you're a freak.
Maybe I should just wear it now, but for some reason I have no idea why. Olivia Rodrigo's Good For You popped into the shuffle on Tidal, and I'm like, this song kicks so much ass. I was listening to like D-Jo and Ballpark Music and Springsteen and Steely Dan, and then I'm like, Good For You by Olivia Rodrigo. Let's boogie, baby. It's a banger.
I loved it. I was really taken off guard, and I've got some Brazilian jazz, and then at the end there's Bjork. So
there we go. Final thing, I'm going to be at Sharks practice on Thursday, pending approval, I should note. So we're going to do the typical Thursday preview stream with the Cardinals. We're going to try to do that Friday morning. So we will stream it, but it will be Friday morning if it's not pre-recorded. So adjust your calendars accordingly.
Adjust.
That's it. It's all about adjustments, baby. Adjust.
That's it.
We're going to adjust ourselves back to society. All right. We'll talk to you on Friday. Adios.